The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You're listening to the Fire Breslow podcast presented by your Bastards of Boston Baseball. I'm your host, Charlie Smith. You can find me on Twitter/X at Smith_MLB. My co-hosts for this one are Terry Cushman at Cushman MLB and Matt Holmes at MLB at Matt. I always feel like that's going to end up being a tongue twister. If you want more Bastards of Boston Baseball content, check out bastardsofbostonbaseball.com. Real quick temperature check, boys. Terry, where are you at?
I'm maintaining a level of skepticism. For three games, it looked like the magic was gone, despite two wins against a very bad team. And then tonight in the eighth inning, the magic returned with back-to-back shots. So we'll see. We're going to get into the deadline and what our expectations are. And I know the guy I want. I haven't heard his name mentioned one time. Probably not going to get him, but what the hell? Let's see what happens.
Before we continue, are you still on Manny Machado? Are you back to Tatis now? Who are you thinking now?
If the Padres eat a third to half of the money, I'm in on Machado.
Oh, here we go. All right, Matt.
Not my first choice, though. Let me preface that.
I'm cold on Machado, but overall,
I can be romanced a little bit.
There were times where I was in on Machado. As far as the Sox go right now, it's getting a little warmer up here. I might have to turn the AC on soon. It wasn't pretty out in Sacramento there, but hey, we're walking away with three out of four. Wins. So wins are always pretty, even when they're ugly. So we'll take the W's there. We'll get into the seven straight series wins later. But yeah, another tough win tonight. I like I said, it's getting warm. I'm going to need to turn the AC on soon. And depending how this trade deadline goes, we could be scorching hot or it could go cold really quick. Because as good as we have been playing, as hot as we have been in July, I do still think there's some holes to be filled and some gaps to be filled here moving forward. And right now is the perfect time to do it.
Gaps are going to be a part of the game, though, for the Boston Red Sox until we become a big market team again. And that doesn't seem to be the direction that we're headed in. My temperature check is kind of stagnant. It's still. Terry very briefly just mentioned about how that magic disappeared and then came back once we hit a couple of home runs, and that ended up being the deciding factor. Earlier today, when I was watching that game, and it's ridiculous, we finished the month 20-4. There's absolutely no reason why we should be upset or annoyed outside of the trade that we made that just completely backfired in two at-bats. I feel okay, but I have a very, very bad feeling that this deadline is not going to be fun. And because of that, it's going to be frustrating for fans, and all that hard work that was put into that 15-game win streak could come crashing down. And that's why I'm a little bit disappointed. You know, we got out of a 14 games under 500 to several games over 500. And like you said, Matt, seven straight series wins. You take three out of four against Oakland, Sacramento. That doesn't make any sense. Against the A's in Sacramento, it's going to be so hard to not say Oakland. And we should be headed in a different direction. We should feel a certain way, but the fact of the matter is some of the mistakes are still happening. And unfortunately we don't have a backup plan for certain situations. So 20-4, a little frustrating. I think you guys both want to talk about the Duran situation first. So I think we should just get that one out of the way. I'm not thrilled about it because I do love Jaren Duran, but it was I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but it just doesn't look good, unfortunately. So, Matt, why don't you go first?
I almost couldn't believe it watching it live with the, you know, it, just once again, we're just back it up. Two singles to lead off that inning where we had just worked hard to tie it up. You know, Gray gets out of a couple innings to keep the lead or keep the tie there for us. And, you know, I don't understand. We have first and second. I like the bunt move in general. Durbin, though, being one of our hotter hitters, he gets the bunt down, almost beats it out to have bases loaded situation there. It was a very good bunt. But you bunt him over to have first and second with one out for Duran to come up. And they did flash his numbers with runners in scoring position up. But I just, you know, read the pulse on the team. I don't like that idea right now. I don't like that move to put him in that situation. But, man, that was a shallow fly ball with the left fielder coming in. Taylor made for him to just come in and hose it right home. The momentum's taking it home. It's exactly where you want to be positioned as an outfielder catching that ball coming home. And on top of that, you've got Wilson Contreras, probably our slowest runner on the base pass, if not our second slowest runner on the team. So, you know, outside of Narvaez. So all that, I like the no call. I mean, I know Chad Epperson, you know, anytime you know the third base coach name, that says something about him. He's usually typically aggressive. I like the hold there. It was tailor-made for a sac fly, but it was way too shallow for Wilson to score. And then you see Duran with his arms up, and at first I could only see the back of his head. So I'm thinking the vibes are high, and Wilson's always chirping at the clubhouse. Maybe this is some sort of inside joke, but the camera stayed panning on him, and his face said it all. He was not kidding. He was swearing and, you know, wanted the RBI. Obviously, he's playing hard. He wants to win, but I don't understand where that's coming from. I mean, anybody who's watching the game knows you don't send him there. Even Duran on third base, you might not send him there. I mean, it's going to take a fast guy to score in that situation. So I don't know what Duran's problem is. This guy just seems to be a total knucklehead at times. We've talked at length about all the mental issues he's having, but I really didn't like it. I mean, this is a team out there on the West Coast. They've been in it all season long. They've had some ups and downs, obviously some really high ups lately, the 15-game win streak, but some really low lows. They were 14 games below 500 at one point. The biggest thing about this team has been the clubhouse vibes, the team vibes. And then you're seeing things like that. I mean, you've seen him getting tussles and have issues with fans, which you kind of understand. Hey, he has thin skin. That is what it is. But now you're beefing internally with teammates while the game is on the field, while you still have two runners in scoring position. And on top of it, I got an idea. Why don't you just hit the ball a little bit farther, Duran? How about that? Or get a base hit or a single or another bunt. You pop it out to shallow left field and you're mad at Wilson Contreras for not scoring. It's just ridiculous on so many levels. I was very surprised by it. And I don't know if it's fueled any of the fire for Wilson's home run in dramatic fashion later in the game, but I feel very fortunate that we're coming out of the game with the win, with the series win. And I don't know what else to say. The guy's probably worthless on the trade market, but Jaron Duran, you got to change your attitude, buddy. You are not in a position to be chirping at anybody else on the team, especially with the way that you've been performing with your numbers this season. So I didn't like it one bit. I'm still surprised that it even happened and everybody will be talking about it, but they'll probably handle it in-house. Chad Tracy at the helm. He seems to be running a tight ship. And if there's anybody you're going to be chirping at, I don't know if Wilson is the guy to do it, but clearly it didn't seem to bother him too much because he went yard for the game winner later in the game. But yeah, Duran, you know, keep digging your hole, buddy. You're not winning anybody over with those kind of with that behavior.
Terry.
Well, like I said in the war room, Craig Breslow, I think it was his very first winter here. In fact, it was. Wasted no time whatsoever trading Alex Verdugo, who probably was a bit of a nuisance in some ways. But, I mean, Duran is just absolutely killing this team in almost every way imaginable. His one saving grace is that he has played very good defense this year. He's been a very good defensive left fielder for the Red Sox. Offensively, basically trash. He's not really the base running threat that he used to be. And behind the scenes, he's a clown and not the good kind, as Charlie often says. Not the kind you have at birthday parties where kids are often throwing tantrums, because Jaren the clown would be throwing the tantrums. And, you know, a lot of people are saying trade him, you know, which would be good. I mean, you're not getting much, but at least he's gone. A lot of people are saying DFA him, just straight up DFA him. There's actually one easier path of least resistance. I just checked. He's got two options left. Send his ass to Worcester. Send his bleeping ass to Worcester and let him cry down there and just be someone else's problem. It doesn't cost any money. It frees up a spot on the 26 man, but it's literally the path they need to take. There's no place for Jaren Duran on this team that's trying to make the playoffs. He's killing the vibe. I don't know if there's a set of monkey bars near that ballpark in Sacramento, but if Duran and Wilson meet there, who you taking? I'm taking Wilson with one hand tied behind his back.
Yeah, I'm going Wilson with that too. Lay off the pre-workout a little bit, Duran. I don't understand why he's so fired up. A great comp though on Verdugo. Obviously a super unlikable guy. I wasn't a huge fan of him. You know, offensively, definitely better bat to ball skills, but Duran probably a little more power, certainly more speed. But you never had issues with like this with Verdugo in the clubhouse, on the field with his teammates, right? Just look like a guy that you didn't want to hang out with. But man, I tweeted it earlier too. I'll take Verdugo over Duran any day. Just the guy's got to go. Worcester seems like the smart move.
I'm not doing it. I'm sorry. I just can't do it. I think Alex Verdugo ended up becoming just a huge nuisance and a pain in the ass. I mean, this is a guy who, I mean, you're so bad. The Dodgers gave a chance to Trevor Bauer, knowing full well that there was drama. They couldn't wait to get rid of Alex Verdugo. They couldn't wait. They're like, here, please take him. He's great. He did not last long. His first year in New York, he throws Alex Cora and the team under the bus because I don't remember the exact line, but it was something along the line of, you know, I can't wait to play for Boone because he's not going to, you know, throw his players under the bus and, you know, air people's dirty laundry or whatever it was. Just so stupid. But I don't want – Verdugo's done. He had shoulder surgery. There's a reason why he's not playing baseball outside of that. He looks like a joke. And he was a joke. You're so bad that Dodgers, the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Braves don't want you. You're trash. There are a couple teams that would take Jaren Duran, and I'm sure this is just an anomaly year because I don't know how you fall that far from grace from last year to this year. Facts are facts, man. I mean, the team, as frustrating as it is, Jaren Duran just needs to you know, you just got to talk to him. Just talk to the kid. I mean, what it looks like to me is someone who's just pressing too much. He's trying to do too much and he's frustrated because he's not performing to the standard in the way that he knows he can perform. That's what you saw. And I mean, I think other players and other teams in general have really locked in to his stance and everything he does because it looked like he leaned back a little bit. You know, it is what it is at this point. Sure, we can say hit the ball farther, but I think before that, Matt, there's nobody who would have run on that and been safe. I mean, as it was, Butler on the Oakland A's is the only player on that team that would have scored on that rip to left field when Duran threw the ball home. And Butler, Lawrence Butler, as fast as he is, almost was thrown out. And that ball was give or take, what, maybe 5-10 feet of variance away from the other ball that Wilson Contreras, who's not even half the speed of Lawrence Butler, you know, being state, you know, being told to hold at third. You have to hold at third. You have to do that. That would have been dumb baseball to not do it.
So real quick, you know, we're getting some quotes post game here. We come on often before you know, before this stuff's even available. So we're, what, 14 and a half minutes into the podcast. This is Chad Tracy's explanation on what really happened with Jaren Duran on that shallow pop fly. And I'll just read the quote. I'll use Gabrielle Starr. Chad Tracy maintained to reporters post-game that Jaren Duran was just cursing himself, just upset that he didn't get the run in. Okay, I've been swearing a lot on this podcast. I'm calling bullshit. We saw it on TV. We saw him hand motioning and gesturing. Yeah, come on, Chad. If you're gonna be a liar, at least be a good one. And why is Chad Tracy taking bullets for Jaren Duran at this point?
It's what good leaders do, I guess, Terry. I mean, he's doing what he has to do as the manager, right? But it's a very fair question. He shouldn't have to be doing it. And anybody who's got any type of activity in between their ears knows that he's lying about that. But I kind of don't mind him defending the player. That's kind of what he has to do. That's what a good manager does. But just absurd. Duran, I don't even want to talk about it anymore. He's just...
Dude, annoying. You're right. He did what he had to do because he's the manager. He's wearing it, knowing full well, everybody in that clubhouse knows, Jaren Duran was not talking to himself. And if he was talking to himself, why would he then continue talking to himself by pointing at third base? Like, that's the facts are facts, right? Like, Jaren, you could be upset, and fair play, I get it. I see what's happening. You're upset with how you're performing. That's literally how I view it. And anybody who has played a professional sport or played a sport knows that. You have not come close to replicating that year, that season. We haven't seen that Jaren yet. And it's frustrating for fans, for your teammates, and most importantly, for yourself, because you know, I know, this is not the Jaren that you want to be putting out there on a regular basis. Still hitting under 200, which is wild to me for Jaren Duran to be hitting under 200. But here we are. Some players now, I mean, hitting 300, you're elite, elite. But Jaren Duran is not a sub 200 hitter. So clearly it's a combination of other players and other teams that have locked in on him and him just flat out struggling, chasing, pressing. That's it.
More concerning than that, Charlie, his on-base percentage is at .255 heading into tonight, too. That's even more concerning. I think you can live with .199 batting average, considering he was still driving in runs in July. I think to some point the top five in the AL that may have slipped after the last couple of days of the month. But if you're doing that and also getting on base, right, then you can kind of live with it. But .255, not good enough to get the job done. Really quick, you mentioned Lawrence Butler. I don't want to spend too much time on this. That throw would have got a really good throw, would have got him. Duran almost did get him on that tag play. Very fast outfielder. I just had to comment on this because I couldn't believe it watching these last couple games. 20 extra base hits on the season for Lawrence Butler. 5 of those extra base hits coming in the last 3 games versus us. 4 doubles and a homer. That's just baseball. The guy single-handedly almost beat him by himself, but yeah, glad to get out of Sacramento with that winning a 3 out of 4. And I think if nothing else, Duran, you're riding some pine tomorrow, buddy. You're definitely not in the starting lineup, if nothing else.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think we stole that series, or do you think we should have won 3 out of 4?
I think we should have won 3 out of 4, but we did steal that series the way that we played. It just seemed for most of the beginning of all 4 of those games, it was the pre-winning streak Red Sox, right? And what I mean by that is you're going against starters that have ERAs above 4, above 5, above 6, and all of a sudden they're looking like aces against you going 6-plus with 2 or less. You know, I think actually all of those starters for the A's had quality starts. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but if I had to guess, I would say they all had quality starts. The only difference between these last 4 games and the pre-winning streak Red Sox were we actually climbed out of those holes. We found ways to get it done, to get the big hit late in the game and steal, what is the old phrase, you know, snatch the victory from the jaws of defeat. So at the end of the day, the Athletics are not a good ball club. You know, they beat themselves a little bit too in that comeback for the three runs there. I think it was an error by the middle infielder. Was it Wilson that had that error? But hey, we capitalized on it. So at this point, I don't really care how we get the wins. I'm happy we got them. But yeah, a lot of work to do, and we're definitely going to be tested and find out what we're made of versus the Dodgers. If we play like that, we're facing a sweep for sure versus them. So
I didn't.
So Terry, go ahead. No, Terry, go ahead, because I'm going to weigh in on that too.
Yeah. So I fell asleep early last night. The A's were up 1-0. So I actually know nothing about what happened. I just woke up and it was a 4-2 win. That was that. Go back to game one. The big inning the Red Sox had where they essentially won the game. There was a botched double play because the second baseman didn't cover the bag. Two or three batters later, the bases were loaded. Sadon hits the grand slam. You know, perhaps the Red Sox still win it in another way, but, you know, sloppy defense by Oakland cost them that game. So it could have been a series split. And then tonight, they had Medina on the mound in the eighth inning with those back-to-back home runs. He nearly choked away the one game that they did win on, I think that was Tuesday. So, you know, the Red Sox caught some breaks. And like I said recently, you need to catch breaks over the course of 162. But, and then like I said in my opening take, we didn't really see the magic of that streak until the eighth inning tonight.
Okay, I'm going to say this. We have been blessed by well above Boston Red Sox average starting pitching, probably the best bullpen in baseball, which is crazy when you think about it, considering the names that you're touting out there. But people are starting to deliver. You're also not seeing pitchers go every other day. I've complained about this with Weiser. Weiser's not pitching every second game. People are getting rested. We talked about Garrett Whitlock, who is absolutely elite. And then coincidentally, in the appearance that they were talking about how elite he was, he gave up a run. We were still, you know, he didn't go down with the ship there. But it was a little nerve-wracking to see that happen. But I feel a certain way because we won 15 games. You don't win 15 games by accident. That's one thing. Number two, because your starting pitching has been able to be this good, people are going to point out to the fact, well, you lost Conley early. You know what? You still wouldn't have had Conley early. And the way I look at it is, yes, it was a major blow because Meade is possibly done for 8 weeks to 10 weeks, maybe this season. I don't know. But you could also look at it like, you know what? You lost early for the season and you never traded for another bat because you only had 1.5 at-bats in a Red Sox uniform. You're winning ball games right now because your pitching is absolutely insane. We used to beg for 4-plus innings. Now you're getting 5-plus. Sonny Gray got you 7. He just won his 13th game. If I'm not mistaken, 14 is his career high. And I've said it before, it's a number he probably should be at in 2026 right now if we didn't blow a couple of games for him early this year. We took our 7th straight series. I don't know how many years I have to go back looking at the Boston Red Sox, you know, series by series to see the last time that we took 7. We went 20-4 in the month of July against some pretty good teams and a couple of cupcakes. But now the big difference is we're not looked at as the cupcake anymore. We were looked at originally as the team that when that's on your schedule, that's a nice 2-3 wins right there. That's not happening anymore. And it may not happen with the Dodgers. And here's the facts, guys. It's going to be fluffy against the Dodgers because Shohei Ohtani's not pitching. He's not doing great. Teoscar Hernandez is back, but he's still recovering from an injury. I don't think Will Smith, their catcher, is back. Their backup catcher can sometimes be a head case, although I think they shut him up and he's starting to deliver again. you don't know what you're going to get with Emmett Sheehan. I don't know if he's in the rotation against the Red Sox for that set. I'm going to one of the games. I'm very curious to know how it works out. But I was going, we're probably going to get swept. Then we win 15 games to, you know what? There's a pretty good chance that we either maybe split, perhaps surprise the nation and maybe take the series and make it 8. But this is the most important series, and not because it's the upcoming series. This is the most important series for the Boston Red Sox in 2026. It has to be. You win every single game, you're buyers for sure. You lose every single game, you're sellers and or probably staying pat because you might at that point be the third wild card team. We'll see. As it currently stands, we're the second wild card team by 2.5 or 3.5 games. I'm not looking at it, so I apologize. But we were 8-9 games out to now 2 games ahead of the third wild card spot. We are the Cleveland Guardians from a year ago when they went on that crazy, or not, was it last year? When was it? Was it last year? I think it was last year when the Guardians won like, I forget, whatever it was, 21 games or some stupid number. Like, the Boston Red Sox have already defied the odds in multiple manners. I am very curious to know what happens in this series. I pray that we don't get slapped around like school children, because that would suck. We need to do well. And as long as we're able to tame the beast, which is, in my opinion, and many view it at this point, the best team in Major League Baseball, you're relevant. Because if you could take them on, the juggernauts of Major League Baseball, you're relevant. You get swept here, you achieve expectations. That's what many people would say.
Yeah, real quick, Charlie, 2 games ahead, 2 games in the wild card, 2 spot, 3.5 behind the Yankees. And Terry, before you get to that, I just want to highlight Sonny Gray, because it's unfortunate we started talking about Duran. You're right. Sonny Gray deserves some flowers tonight, battling through 7 for a while, didn't have his best stuff, 7 hits, 2 walks, 4 runs, but ends up coming out of it with the win, gives us 7 strong. And you said it actually there. I just was looking it up. Unless I'm wrong here, we haven't had a starter go 7 since Jake Bennett back on July 8th. So it's been a little over 3 weeks since we had a starter go 7 plus innings. I see a lot of 6s. So maybe some guys went into the 7th, but 7 full innings on a night where we needed to rest the bullpen a little bit after extra innings and heading into that Dodgers series, which I think they've already earned the right to be buyers, but you know, we'll get to more trade deadline discussions later on. I'm not thinking or expecting anything major to be happening despite all of the rumors online. But yeah, I just wanted to pause there and chat a little bit about Sonny Gray, because he battled and gave us a chance to win tonight. And he deserves a lot of credit for sticking in there. 5 strikeouts and 3 of those came in the 7th inning. So really hunkered down and kept us in it. You know, kudos to you, Sonny Gray.
I'm a little worried about Gray though. I mean, he wasn't great his last time out. Tonight, a little bit wonky. So, you know, and you don't have Connolly early. I think he's going to be back soon for the Nationals. So I don't know. Ranger, his health is up and down. Patrick Sandoval has been giving us a chance to win every time. So I guess that's fine. But I mean, who do you feel great about?
Sorry, I got to keep us all honest here. That has been way above expectations for Sandoval. We were all patiently waiting to ship him out for a bag of chips, including myself. We were done. I was so pissed of these 2-year deals where the first year they don't even pitch. They don't even play. Mm-hmm. We're just wait, guys. Don't worry. It's the best thing ever. We did it with Paxton. We did it with Sandoval. Who else did we do it with? We've done it with like 4 guys.
Giolito, but I think he got hurt after we signed him. That's his elbow issue, but similar situation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Paxton, there were Liam Hendricks, even though he's a reliever.
Thank you. Yes, Liam Hendricks. Yes, yeah. You're right.
Yeah, this was the first winter we didn't get the Tommy John special signing, you know, so I think he finally learned his lesson.
Took him 4 times.
I think the rotation is vulnerable right now. That's how I kind of see it. I don't see us adding a big arm, but we'll just kind of see how it goes. I was just looking at the schedule for August and a lot of cupcake matches. We got a 4-game set against the Blue Jays. They're in last place. Might sell some pieces. I don't know. But I would expect they probably would. So they'll just be even weaker. We got the Marlins in there. They're not having a terrible year. We got the White Sox, who seem to have turned it around a little bit. We did sweep them. But not really, at least for the first half of the month, many tough matches. So we'll see. We'll see. It, you know, we had a brutal first half with the way the schedule was. But the deadline, you know, we'll see.
Terry, I don't disagree. I think the pitching staff is actually very vulnerable right now, losing early, obviously, forever now. And Sandoval, as good as he's been, I'm not super surprised by how good he's been pitching, but he kind of gets you 5 and a good night. Maybe they'll start strengthening him out. But on top of that, Toley and Bennett seem to have already kind of hit some innings limitations here. They're going to be, I think, monitored a little bit more closely moving forward. And we still have 2 more months of baseball. So I wouldn't be surprised if he looks for another starting pitcher. I'm sure there's some ones available. Obviously, Scooble is going to be like top of the market premium pitcher. But maybe a guy like Peralta, or I see Waka around. Maybe you can find a way to bring one of those guys in for some depth. I would not hate bringing in another starting pitcher here moving forward. In fact, Sandoval being serviceable here, his first couple starts, probably is what ultimately gave Craig the confidence to flip early. And now I'm starting to be a little suspect about the rotation as well. Crochet, obviously, still nowhere in sight. Ranger's kind of been on and off. He pitches well when he does pitch, but he's, you know, has 2, I think, separate stints on the IL this year already. So everybody seems to be kind of on innings limits. And, you know, the more arms, the better, I think, moving forward here as we head into the dog days.
Yeah, and does Bayo get forced back into a rotation spot, you know, as some of this goes down? Is there another hidden gem? I mean, I had not heard of Jake Bennett until, you know, it was announced he would get called up. And, you know, being a Heim Bloom survivor, you know, when you're trotting out a guy you've never heard of, it doesn't typically go well, but it's gone very well in Bennett's case. But yeah, it is what it is. And as far as the deadline goes, my expectations are low. You know, we got unlucky with Meade. But what I will say, and what I did say on my last show, I think Connelly Early was a massive overpay for a guy who's only been good for 2 or 3 months of a 5-year career. Okay. So if we overpaid for Meade, what's the next player we get going to cost? Like, that's why I'm skeptical. Does Toley have to be in the package? Does Bennett have to be in the package? I think the stud shortstop there, who am I thinking in the minors? Arias, Franklin Arias.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. He's going to be in the deal. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a 3-month rental or someone that's controllable. He probably will be in the deal if you're getting a major piece.
Yeah, I think that's the worst part or most unfortunate part about that trade is he did pay a high price for me, right? Early has been proven. He's been performing at the big league level ever since he stepped foot on a big league mound. And not only did he pay a premium for that, but he also set the market for all subsequent trades to come after that, right? Now everybody, he just set the market for a right-handed bat. Now everybody's going to be expecting a quality arm in return for shipping off a right-handed bat, right? Or if we want to flip an even highly more performative right-handed bat, an all-star, an MVP, whatever, somebody who actually is a quality proven veteran player, now that's going to cost you even more than Connelly Early theoretically. So typically teams end up overpaying right at the deadline. My concern is that he overpaid early in the deadline and may have shot his load a little bit too early. And when it comes to the trade deadline, though, honestly, my expectations, the bar is on the ground for me. Maya Angelou once famously said, If you don't like something, change it. If you can't change it, change your mind about it. And the track record at the deadline has not been great for Craig Breslow. So 2024, we brought in Lucas Sims, Luis Garcia, Danny Jansen, who could forget, and James Paxton, second iteration with the Red Sox. And then last year, 2025, which we were once again red hot heading into the trade deadline last year. And even before that, if you recall, we had the 2024 Netflix documentary that aired right before the 2025 season. And at the end of that documentary, everybody was saying, we're going all in, watch out for us. And to a degree, they did. They brought in Bregman. They made the deal for Crochet, all to just go 9-1 heading into the All-Star break and end up with, I can't even say it without cringing a little bit, Dustin May and Steven Matz, who actually pitched pretty well. And I think that was actually an okay low quality, you know, again, not move the needle move for Craig. So I think we're in line for one of those type of deadlines again this year. Very underwhelming. You know, he's going to probably bring in some more players, but will they be impact players? That's my question. And I'm going to say no. And just one other thing, I'm changing my mind about it just so it doesn't drive me crazy. I'm choosing to view the Connelly Early for Curtis Meade trade as Connelly Early and Luis Perales for Curtis Meade and Jake Bennett. That's how I find calmness before I go to sleep at night. That's how I'm sleeping a little bit better, viewing that trade as a four-person deal instead of just the two. And then that makes me feel a little bit better about it as I watch these guys play every day. But don't expect anything too important, too crazy at the deadline. And trust me, I hope I'm wrong. I want to be proven wrong here, but I'm not going to set my expectations too high just to be let down by Sir Craig Breslow and team.
That's an interesting way to look about it, right? That's like, oh man, someone just rear-ended my car, but the lights still work. That's kind of how it feels right now. I get what you're doing, and I appreciate the fact that you're trying to find a little bit of positivity in an otherwise difficult situation, because the fact of the matter is, as much as that trade was an overpay, the result of it was a disaster, which was nobody's fault. It wasn't anybody's fault that he got hit in the hand, broke it, and then that's – or wrist, right? I think it was his wrist. I can't remember where it hit him. It was just
– his wrist.
When I saw it, I was like, this isn't happening. This is just – this isn't real. And he's got like a bit of a hand cover as well. It was just unlucky. Like it just, that's just the way the cookie crumbled, since we're going quotes and crap this episode. It's hard. It really does suck. And I think we are going to be a little bit underwhelmed at the deadline. We have one person here that's saying right here. So we're going to give a little shout out to Corey Huapaya. Arias is going to be gone. If Arias is gone, good God, if you don't get a King's ransom of a haul. But you're right. You set the standard. We'll give you Connelly Early for a guy that's only proven this year that he can do well against major league pitching. Because the past couple of years, he's been borderline irrelevant. Nobody would know who he is. He's been released, just DFA, because he wasn't getting the job done. So a little brutal, if you ask me. Arias not being here is going to be tough. If there's a way that you can get rid of Meyer, even Anthony at this point, I get it. They're 21, they're kids, but people are going to be really upset if Arias is gone. That's all I'll say.
Well, here's what could happen. Maybe Arias just simply gets called up. And there's your shortstop. If you want to ship out Duran, I mean, outfielders are more or less a dime a dozen. You know, we might not like who they get, but who knows? Roman Anthony is swinging a bat now, which is a big development. I think, Matt, you expressed a little bit of skepticism on how healthy he really is. And as soon as you raised that, my instant thought was, well, you know, if maybe they're saying he's getting closer just to try to maybe gain a little bit of leverage here in trade talks, be like, well, you know, we don't need an outfielder. I mean, we got Anthony possibly coming back. So I don't, my expectations are low. You also have Christian Campbell heating up. And if the bar is Duran, yeah, I'll take Campbell in left field. Let's see what happens. You know, not ideal, but so
put Yoshida back in left. But to your point really quick about Roman Anthony, and actually not just them, but also supposedly Story on his way back, IKF also. So there are some reserves that just I've said it before. I hope Craig isn't counting on those guys to be our trade deadline acquisitions, because yeah, it'd be nice to have, you know, IKF back. I won't lie, for some infield depth. I can't believe I'm saying it, but again, he's not going to move the needle. And just really quick on Roman Anthony, my spidey senses are tingling as well when I heard and saw that. The timing is just odd. And I can't help but think that the Sox propagandists are back at work here. And I'm not going to believe it until I see it. It's 2026. Roman, send the TikTok, send the video of you swinging the bat, and then I'll believe it. I don't want to hear a report from, oh, so-and-so in-house said Roman swinging a bat again and he's doing soft toss or whatever he's doing. Just send the video so we can all see it with our own eyes, because we've seen it time and time again with these injuries, and I'm just not buying what they're selling anymore. Any more reports that come out, you want to show guys rehabbing? Well, then just put up the video of them rehabbing so we can see it with our own eyes. Even if it's an AI claw generated image, I would believe that more than another Passan tweet or Carabas or whoever is spreading these rumors. But you're right. We're right against a trade deadline, and maybe they're just trying to buy some leverage and not sound so desperate or seem so desperate trying to bring in a bat. But I still think he's a ways away.
I think the more realistic path here, I gave this take the other night. You're probably better off taking on a relatively big contract. You're both going to hate one of the names. That's the name I bring up. I'm an apologist for him. You could probably get Devers back at DH. If you don't like that one, that's fine. Okay. Well, we can leave it alone. If the Orioles aren't quite in it, maybe you see if they're interested in being bailed out of the Pete Alonso deal. You know, maybe they just don't want that money on the books. Now, as I pointed out, he has basically lived up to the billing. He's hitting right around his career average, ton of home runs, on base is about the same. And he had a bad start too. So perhaps, you know, in the last couple of months, he's actually maybe blowing away his averages in that sample size. So just an option there. I mean, if you're taking on, I forget how much he signed for, I think it was around 150, 160. So if you're taking 120 to 130 million off their payroll, you're probably not putting Franklin Arias in that deal. You know, it's not exactly a salary dump, but it's not going to command this blockbuster deal necessarily. Another guy I've mentioned a lot, Fernando Tatis. You know, if the Padres are, I can't remember if they've sold the team or if they're on the verge of selling the team, but if they want to clear some payroll, this is a way to do it. They are currently just one game above 500, two games out of the National League wild card, in a very stacked National League, by the way. So I don't know how sustainable they look. Another one, I was just looking at the Mets because they did trade away AJ Minter today. You know, one of the better eighth inning guys in Major League Baseball, has been for a long time. So that's like an indication that perhaps the selling has begun for them. And I'm just kind of looking through their stats, and I don't think we're interested in soon to be 34 Francisco Lindor for another 5 or 6 years. Can I safely assume that? So one guy you could look at there, it's complicated because I think he's got opt-outs right away, but maybe you could work out a deal for Bo Bichette, who isn't exactly lighting it up this year. He's got 10 home runs, took him forever to hit his first one. He's hitting 259 with a 304 on base. All of his metrics are down. So perhaps it's a buy low situation. Perhaps it's a rental type thing. He's playing third base right now. He was a shortstop, was never a great shortstop. I don't know how he slots in, probably at shortstop, because Durbin is just so good right now, but I don't know. There's options out there where they might be less than ideal. You guys didn't like Devers. Tatis might be unattainable. Alonso is probably just too far outside the box. That's probably just me reaching. But I don't know. I think there is a move that could take place, and I would target big contracts to do it.
I like the idea of Alonso. I'm not quite sure why the Orioles would do that, especially just in that first year, and he has been playing just fine. You stole my thunder a little bit, though. I just think that the Mets feel like the best trading partner for us right now. And I didn't realize that they flipped AJ Minter today. That is a signal that they are selling officially, right? So that's a good sign for us buyers. I don't love the thought of Francisco Lindor, but the contract makes it so you don't have to give up as much if you're going to take that on. And if we're not playing baseball next year, then salaries don't matter. So that's one of those years. I think Lindor is a good ball player who probably be second baseman maybe later in his career. If you're eating all of the contract, you probably don't have to give up as much. But I mentioned before, I at this point kind of think we need a little more starting pitching depth, and maybe you can get creative and get a starter from the Mets with a Lindor or a Bichette. And then you get a 2-for-1 all in the same move that you need. You get some, you know, reinforcements for your pitching, maybe a Clay Holmes. I know Freddie Peralta is a free agent at the end of the year. I don't think he's having a great season right now. But I don't really care who it is, but I want it to be impactful for this team to make a run. We're already staring at a lockout for next year. Who knows what's going to happen in 2028? You know, last year was nice to make the playoffs, but the one playoff win isn't really good enough in my book. I feel like I'm not the only one of the fan base that's starving for a deep playoff run. And the team has proven to you lately that they have the fight. They have the poise to do it. And if we can bring in reinforcements, then we may be able to compete for the American League pennant. The American League is still wide open, in my opinion, but this next couple of days is really going to dictate really the whole league, right? Who's going to be stepping up and stepping down. And I know Franklin Arias has been at the top of everybody's radar and all of his numbers have been super promising, but I just want to remind everybody about another former number one prospect in the Red Sox system, shortstop, by the way, who we traded for, I think, only 1.5 seasons for Jake Peavy. It was a three-team deal. I'm talking about the two-way player, shortstop, utility infielder, and also pop star Jose Iglesias. We traded him, and we never thought twice about it. Peavy didn't – he shored up our rotation, but we can't pinpoint – he's probably the 10th best guy on the team to help us win that championship. The perception of us having a deep lineup or a deep rotation at that time maybe did more than anything that he actually did on the field. So everybody just needs to calm down about Franklin Arias. We have no idea what he's going to do. I know he went yard in his first at-bat in AAA at Polar Park. That's awesome. That's great. But we've done it before, and it's proven success. We traded Iglesias. We got back Peavy. We won a World Series in 2013. And then if you even go back farther, we traded Hanley Ramirez, who was an absolute stud for the Marlins, and we got back a horse in Josh Beckett and an awesome third baseman in Mike Lowell. And guess what? We also won a championship there. So we need to stop hoarding prospects. We've seen what's happened with Marcelo Meyer, Roman Anthony, Christian Campbell. We've seen all these guys right in front of our faces in near-term memory, and yet we still put Arias on this pedestal. I agree that he warrants more trade capital with the prospect rating, but unleash him, man. Let's send him out there and bring in some real pieces, and let's make a push for the pennant. Let's do it.
It's interesting, real quick. It's interesting that we, you know, you're drawing up some interesting memories, right? Like it's the nostalgia that's kind of kicking in, you know? Terry's point about sucking up a large contract being possibly the only way to go, as cute as that is, I don't know if another team would do it. I especially, as much as we would hope for it, because it would be a game-changing trade, I don't think the O's are going to trade with in their division. I don't think they're going to try to beef up another team that is only going to continue you know, can playing at their level that they're at right now, knowing full well they're a bat away from competing. I really think we are one right-handed power bat, especially with Fenway Park and that green monster. You're one big bat away from dominating or doing work. Your pitching isn't a problem. Would it be great to short up, maybe get another arm? Sure. But we've already said it. If we're not willing to get rid of Arias, maybe that path of least resistance, Terry, you're talking about, maybe you do bring him up. Give him a taste of what October, September is going to look like. Xander Bogaerts, when he made his debut, didn't he make his debut basically in the playoffs? Like, he not there, right?
Yeah, he did. And here's another example. 2007, Jacoby Ellsbury was in Double A that July or August, and then he's the center fielder in the World Series and had a very good playoff run. So It's not unprecedented. Andrew Benintendi went through the minors at a meteoric level. He was only drafted the summer before, and everyone loves to point out, well, he faded and stuff, but he was very good his first few years. Very good. So, you know, we'll see. I wouldn't feel like I'm kind of souring on Zach Neto. A week ago, I was kind of high on him. I'd still do it, but just not for a massive price. And so maybe you just do that. And maybe the bat you get is an outfielder. You option or trade Duran, and then you go get an outfielder. I don't know how you do it.
He's going to have to get creative. I don't hate the idea of Arias. And yeah, I think you're right. As Bogaerts did make his debut in the playoffs because Middlebrooks was struggling mightily. I enjoy you on the broadcast, Will, but you know, you're the reason that Bogaerts got thrown into the fire in his not natural position, by the way, had to come and play third base. Another guy too, let's just say they call up Arias second half of the season and he doesn't succeed. Maybe that helps him when he comes back for next year, to just have some experience in the big leagues, and now he's not a true, you know, red shirt rookie or whatever it is. He'd still be rookie by service time. But, you know, I think the same thing happened with Pedroia in 06. He got about 100 at-bats. He was awful. And if we had Twitter and podcasts back then, we would all be saying, this guy stinks. We need to trade him and get rid of him. But then what happened next year? We all know what happened. The laser show happened, and he won Rookie of the Year, then MVP. We won a World Series in between that. So, yeah, I'm all for bringing in Arias. He just got to AAA, so you probably won't see him until probably September call-up time. But I just wanted to, you know, keep everybody at bay here because we're crowning this guy already, just as we did Roman Anthony. And, well, we see how well that's working out. We see how well it's working out with Campbell. I saw somebody else say Moncada in the trade, too. Perfect example there. So these guys don't always pan out. I would like to see an impact bat. I think I'm with you, though, Neto. I liked the idea earlier in the year. Now that I've seen the formula kind of succeed with, you know, the merry-go-round on the bases, let's make contact, let's get some sacrifice hits. We do need the long ball, but what we don't need is strikeouts. Duran is already carrying the torch with a ton of strikeouts for us. I think Neto's K rate probably doesn't fit too much in the lineup, but if you can get him without moving your top three guys, you know, Bennett, Tolley, Arias, I'm all in. I'm bringing him in. I really just hope that we're not counting on Story to come back and be our starting shortstop for the second half of the year. I would take Lindor all day. And maybe if it's a Lindor, you're eating all the money, they have to eat Story's money, you know, something like that. You can make it work. But please don't let Story be the answer to our prayers here for the trade deadline needs.
What's Lindor's contract? How many more years does he have?
I just looked it up. So okay. It's... the money's definitely $140 million, so it's either over 5 or 6 years. I think 5 years. Yes, I still have it up. 5 years. So through his... I misspoke on that. I thought he was about to be 34. He'll be 33 in November. So okay, that takes him through his age 37 season. And, I mean, they have to eat money on it. I'm not doing that deal. If you look at his save on chart, it actually looks really good. One thing I did look at was his exit velocity. It's very consistent from where it's been most of his career. He's about around, his average exit velocity is right around 90 miles an hour.
Okay. I want to ask you something. When you think of Francisco Lindor, what are the first things that come to mind?
Guy who wants to win.
Sure.
Mr. Smiles. Wow. No, I do think he's he wants to win. Honestly, I just think an all-around solid ball player, good defense, good base running. Average hasn't been there for much for the Mets, but typically a guy that shows up gives you 150 games a year, which is what Bogaerts always gave you. He had a little bit of a stint on the IL this year, but a guy that's going to, similar to Alonso, just lace him up every day, give you a chance to win.
You're spending $30 million for the New York Mets version of Alex Bregman. You are trying to get a guy who's no longer hitting home runs, no longer steals bases, is hitting barely above 220. We already have guys like that. I'm sure he's probably going to be the clubhouse leader. He'd be able to rally the troops around and probably help some of the youngsters. He does have the added benefit of being a switch hitter. But I really do want to caution us on going the route of getting somebody for that much money. And Terry, absolutely right. There's no way I'm touching that contract if they're not eating a large majority of the money or something to at least make it palatable. Because if they're like, yeah, you know, kind of like what you guys did to San Fran with Rafi Devers, you'd have to do that. The answer is no, because we don't absolutely need to take on that deal. Seeing the numbers drop off the way that they have, like if you look at Lindor's numbers, right? This is a guy that had 30 home runs, three straight years. He's played 53 games so far. So given, you know, he's had a limited sample size, but his numbers aren't pretty. If you compare everything last year to this year, or even over the last couple of years, you're seeing a lot of the numbers staying the same. Doubles completely below the mark, home runs way below the mark, RBIs way below the mark, runs scored way under the mark. This is a guy that used to be 100 runs a year. He was good for that. Now, I mean, I don't know what I'm going to get with him, and I just can't get behind it knowing full well that he's 33. He's already on the wrong side of 30. I don't know if this is a needle mover in the right direction.
Definitely scares me this year. The production hasn't been there. I'm trying to get his splits, but I got his reference page up, and I don't know. I'm seeing the numbers here. He's basically been a 30-30 guy the last 3 years. 31 and 31 last year, 33 homers, 29 steals the year before, 31 and 31 the year before that, 30-plus doubles each of those 3 years too, on base at 340 every year, except for this year, obviously some injuries, so I think he still has some gas left in the tank. And, you know, the thing about the contract is you can pay money or with prospects, right? So you want to give up less prospects, then you eat more money. I really don't care about the money of Uncle Stevie Cohen or of John Henry, but I know that's going to be a factor when it comes to the trade. I just think he's an attainable piece that actually does give you a chance to win every game, really. So I'm still trying to pull up his splits, but I wouldn't be upset if we don't end up with him. I just, again, I'll take anybody over Story, including Chang.
Terry.
Two things. He's hitting 227 right now. That looks bad. According to Baseball Savant, his expected batting average is actually 260. So I don't know if he's getting unlucky, what it is, but he, you know, the advanced data says he's a better hitter than what he looks like right now. Here's my trade package. And I don't love it because I'm such an apologist for this guy. But if you want to make the money work, put Christian Campbell in the deal. He got a $68 million contract. These first couple of years are cheap, so the bigger money is still to come. That'll offset a big chunk of the 140 that you're about to pay for Francisco Lindor. If you want to do it that way, I'd force them to take Trevor Story. I'm assuming there's going to be a strike next year. Next year would be when the contract ends. So they're essentially just taking on the balance of this year's contract, which would be one third of 22 million roughly. So I would do that. I'd throw a mid-level prospect in, but that bails out the Mets. Perhaps they salvage Christian Campbell. Maybe he becomes the next Fernando Tatis. I don't know. But he's on a hot streak right now. And that'd be what I do. I'd put Bayo in that deal, but I don't know if you can afford to trade Bayo at this point. You know, we talked about the vulnerability of the rotation. Maybe Bayo doesn't start. Maybe you just rock the opener thing. Like I said, it works so good for Nick Pivetta. You know, why mess with it? But then with Alonso, like, let's pivot back there. Maybe Bayo has to go, because the reason the Orioles suck isn't their offense. They have a robust offense, but they have no pitching. So maybe they think their program might fix him. I don't know. But just a couple of things to kick around.
Yeah, and I did get his splits up here. April, March, a little below average, below his career average, I'll say. June, only played 5 games. That's when he went down with the injury. I think July is more of the Lindor of at least 2026 and 2028. Who knows how he gets later in his, you know, late 30s, 36, 37. But, you know, in July, he's got 22 games, 21 hits, 5 homers, 15 RBI, 17 strikeouts. I always love to see more hits than strikeouts. You know, on base, 343, right where he was the last 3 years, OPS of 820. So, yeah, you plug him in, and I actually think we still need another arm, either a reliever or a starter, because I do think the pitching depth throughout for the second half. But I think Lindor makes you a better club in 2026, and candidly, that's kind of all I'm thinking about right now, because 2028 seems so far away. And, you know, if we spoil this trade deadline and the second half we run out of gas just like we did in 25 and 24, then I'm just going to be deflated, and I probably won't even care that there's no baseball next year.
Follow-up question to Lindor. You trade for Lindor. You're sucking up a lot of money. He's not cutting it. He gets injured. He's not doing well, and you get Trevor Story 2.0. How badly would fans turn on Francisco Lindor? Do you think that they would turn on somebody like that, or do you think that they would just let it play out because it's Frankie Lindor, who's got a fantastic smile and just a good attitude? You know, like, that's the problem. Like, this is one of the hardest markets to play. And as bad as it's been in New York, Juan Soto went and chased the money. He knows full well he's never going to win a World Series in New York. It's just not going to happen. It was like Mike Trout going to the Angels. It wasn't going to happen. They kind of tried. It was cute, but you botched a couple moves and it just didn't work out. Juan Soto, July 30, 2026, Juan Soto may never win a playoff series as a member of the New York Mets. It's possible, right? I think the Boston Red Sox will have a prettier outlook than the New York Mets in the next 10 years. People could say whatever they want about Juan Soto. I'm nervous, though, because the Boston Red Sox finally, after 2027, with some of their deals that may expire because there's no baseball, will be able to get over the bad contracts. Let's not get over bad contracts and possibly take on another one. I don't think Francisco Lindor is going to be a 30-30 guy in 2028. I don't think he's going to do it in 2029. I don't think he's going to be worth his contract.
Well, I mean, you got to make the money work. They either have to eat money or they have to take on money. And at that point, I might have talked myself into it while I was giving that take. I don't know. But
I think you just did, actually. I think you did.
Hang on. Let me just throw this out there. Okay. Let's say I eat my words for the rest of the season and we're a playoff team, and we're more than a playoff team. Let's say we're good. This is your infield, possibly. Contreras at first. By hopefully some point in mid to late September, Curtis Meade at second, Francisco Lindor at shortstop, and Caleb Durbin at third base. How are we looking?
Better.
That's the best infield option that we would have in our roster for sure.
Right. Terry talked himself into it. Let's stop kidding ourselves.
I just want to answer your question, Charlie, because I'm not sure the fans have turned on Story. This is a guy that is supposedly the best clubhouse leader, so good of a clubhouse guy that everybody's completely ignoring how terrible he's been on the field. Even last year, when he finally gave us 150 plus games, 155, I don't remember how many off the top of my head, he did accumulate the power numbers. He got us 25 bombs, 90 plus RBI. He did have some big hits last year and was a big part of our success. And because he was actually able to play 150 plus games, he actually accumulated the amount of some stats. And that's kind of why I like a guy like Lindor. And I don't think it's a fair comparison because Lindor shows up. This year, the games played is going to be down because he missed a lot of June with, I think it was a wrist injury. I haven't been following too closely, but I mean, this guy has played 150 plus games almost every season of his big league career. And I think he's a little more versatile in the sense that I know Story played second base, but Lindor can go play third base if you wanted him to, or second base, maybe even first base down the line when he's 37. I'm not sure. And I think if you brought him to Fenway, maybe he's not a 30-30 guy anymore. The legs will break down eventually. I'm actually surprised he's even had 30 steals the last three seasons plus. I was surprised to see that candidly. But I think his power numbers may go up playing at a place like Fenway, playing with that green monster, hitting, you know, pulling. He has a lot of – I don't have a spray chart, but every time I see him hitting balls, I feel like he ropes them down the line, either left or right field. And if those are in Fenway Park, there's a good chance that those are gone. I think the ballpark plays a little bit better for him as well. And look, I'm not losing any sleep. I'm not going to be voting for Lindor for president. But if we were to bring him in, and Terry, you said it, that's a pretty solid infield. I think Meade coming back in late September maybe is a more of a stretch. But that's a solid infield with the outfield that we've been putting out. We still need somebody in left field for Duran there. But yeah, that lineup can compete, I think.
He is an all fields guy. But here's my final take. We're at an hour and six, 1:28 a.m. I think this is the last West Coast show during the week anyway. We're seeing tons of propaganda out there. We're seeing Jeff Passan saying the Red Sox are going to do something big. It's like he's swearing on his mother's life. I don't know if he has a mom or whatever.
They're salivating, Terry.
I don't know. Maybe she was a bad mom and left. I don't know. I don't know what Jeff Passan's, but he's very adamant. Let's put it that way. That the Red Sox are going to do something. We've seen the propaganda every winter, every July. If we come out of this with a non-impact bat, those are terrible optics. Those are terrible optics. And Breslow needs to do something. He needs to do something he's never done and be, you know, I'm trying to, in an unprecedented way, he needs to be effective going into this deadline. So we'll see. Right now, I mean, the offense, congrats for winning 3 out of 4 against the A's, but the offense sputtered, the pitching sputtered, and, you know, there's options out there. There's moves that can be made. If he fails to make one, I don't want him back. I don't want to suffer through another winter of Craig Breslow if he can't get it done in his third try in 2026.
Matt, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, goodbye Franklin Arias then, I guess, is the moral of that story. But no, I'm with you. I think he has to make a move. It would be extremely frustrating. The optics would be terrible. I don't care what the price is. The market is the market. You helped set the market, by the way, Craig, by moving a week early, calling up Washington, who wasn't even shopping Meade at the time. And, you know, to your point, I don't want to be kicking this team right now while they're riding as high as they ever have this year. Look, they won 3 out of 4. It wasn't pretty. It is still 3 wins out of 4 games. My concern, though, is the offense was lackluster until late in the game. The pitching did not pitch great. And if we played like that against the Dodgers, against the Rays, against the White Sox, against the Yankees, we're not winning 3 out of 4 games. We had the benefit of playing the Sacramento Athletics, who beat themselves. You said it. They had a chance to put us away with that double play the other night. They didn't. Sadon made them hurt with the grand slam. Tonight, same thing. Air, we made them pay. That's what you do to bad teams. You make them pay. But it's not good enough to place to beat the teams. And I know we did just come off a 15-0 run against some of those teams, but we were playing much better against those. And if we play that the way we played these last 4 nights against the Dodgers this weekend, then it's not going to be a fun weekend for them.
I don't think there's anything else we can add, honestly. Just be comfortable. Ah, Terry, go ahead. Go ahead, Terry.
Allow me to close out the show. And I'm going to end it with a quote.
Go ahead.
From Jaren Duran. I'm going to have to censor myself. Jaren Duran said this to the media. I bleeping suck. Of course. I'm bleeping pissed at myself. I can't even do a bleeping job for this team.
Well, get comfortable being uncomfortable, Red Sox fans. You heard it live from Terry Cushman. That is going to do it from your Bastards of Boston Baseball podcast.